Blog Talk Radio.
Ready, steady, go!
Good evening, listeners. This is Sifu Robert Deal, and we are not joined by my normal host today, Cristina De Jesus. She is at the Pacific Northwest Heat Seminar. Now, the ones teaching that seminar are Professor Al DeGascos, Guru John Daniels, Sifu Mike Mathers, and Sifu Chai Baker. And it sounds like a blast. She's been posting pictures and comments all weekend. Now, I would like to bring on my guest co-host. He has definitely set a record. This is like the fifth time he's been on with us. Please help me welcome Wayne Riley to the show. Wayne, how are you?
Hey, doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. And I don't know why my chat board's not opening, but I am doing really well. We'll get on with the show. Wayne, how's the weather where you are?
It's not bad. It's not bad. A little warmer than it's, you know, been for a while, but still cold.
Ah, very cool. Well, it's actually clouding up. It's supposed to rain in the next half hour or so. So that I always enjoy the rain. I sit outside underneath my awning and just enjoy the heck out of it. Now, let's get on with the show. We've got some birthday shout-outs, and then I apologize. Well, for one thing, I apologize to the Denver fans that are listening. I'm sorry. It looks like the Seahawks are going to go all the way for it. I feel sorry for Manning, because like I told you offline, Wayne, he would have been the first quarterback in history to take two different franchises for a Super Bowl win.
Yeah.
Seahawks had, now I know you didn't watch it, but in fact, I came in late. Seahawks had the fastest score in history. First 12 seconds of the game, they scored a safety. Which is, wow, 12 seconds.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely nuts. So let's go on with the show. Birthday shout-outs. I've got three birthday shout-outs here. One is to my son, Brandon, that is turning 19 on the 4th. A good friend of the show, wife of CEO of the Masters Hall of Fame, Dana Hecht, is, I'm not going to say how old she's turning, but her birthday is also on the 4th, and another good friend of the show and promoter of tournaments, Elaine Yamano, her birthday is on the 8th. Do you have any birthday shout-outs you'd like to do, Wayne?
I have absolutely none.
You have absolutely none.
Absolutely none.
You just sound like a lonely guy. But anyway, for everybody out there that's celebrating a birthday, this song is for you.
Happy birthday to you.
Well, happy birthday, everybody. Even if we didn't mention you, I want you to enjoy your special day. Now, this is the part where Rusty usually takes over. And this time, Wayne's going to do it. So this is Wayne's health news for the week. Go ahead, Wayne. What have you got for health news?
All right. Got it for health news. Childproofing. Childproofing, greenproofing. You ever heard of greenproofing?
Yes, I have.
Greenproofing. Really? That makes one of us then. We got here, childproofing is a family universal. There are electrical outlets to cover, medicine cabinets to lock, knives and other potentially sharp objects to stash far away from prying fingers. All of this is critical, but the majority of families, this is where the process begins and ends, which is too bad, because it misses entirely too many environmental hazards and safeguards. Think of it as greenproofing. Environmental toxins have disproportionately large effect on babies and kids, children's developing bodies that are much more vulnerable to cellular havoc. Some greenproofing comes easily. It's pretty simple to banish synthetic pesticides and to replace chemical cleaning products with non-toxic alternatives. Done and done. The real trick lies in tackling less obvious dangers like these. White surfaces. Dust and the final resting places of many toxins in your house and in, around the environment. Remove as much as you can with a damp cloth, not a duster. These just spread the dust around and end up just trapping it, and it stays and grows, and it's nasty. Okay, keep up on the dusting. Get rid of your non-stick cookware. Can emit... Ooh, I did not know that. Purifluoro chemicals. That's a mouthful. Another class of endocrine disruptors. Use cast iron, stainless steel, and enamel-coated cast iron instead. Why I cannot pronounce this, I have no idea. Perfluorochemicals, there we go, are also found in stain-resistant fabric treatments. Get some tight-weave slip covers for any furniture. If buying new, don't ask for stain-guarding treatment. Banish chlorine. The chlorine in dishwasher detergent, laundry bleach, and treated tap water is easily volatilized into my mouth is not working tonight. It's just, your sinuses are crazy after tonight. Goes from my sinuses to my mouth not working. Okay. Inhale into vapors when heated. Use a drinking water filter, a bath, shower filter, chlorine-free products to keep it out of young lungs and bodies. Test your tap. See what I mean? My mouth does not want to work tonight. Test your tap water and filter accordingly. Make a clean sweep of your bathroom cabinet. Unless you have an all-natural personal care routine, the conventional products you're using are filled with unhealthy chemical ingredients. Get in the habit of cleaning your indoor air by opening windows for at least 10 minutes a day, even in the wintertime. The EPA says that indoor air can be 3 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, even in an urban environment. Remove the foam pads from under your area rugs. They're a key source of toxic flame retardants that can interfere with the endocrine system. Replace them with natural latex, no skid versions. Here are a few other ideas from some like-minded bloggers. Jennifer at Healthy Choices Happy Tots reminds those of us living in homes built before 1978 to be on the lookout for flaking paint that could contain lead. When it comes to traditional childproofing, she also suggests choosing cabinet locks, corner guards, and outlet covers free of BPA, PVC, and yeah, the rest of that. Plethora, or boy, she's sure to give me stuff with all the crazy words I can't pronounce tonight, huh? Generation Pures, certified green proofer. Natalia Lazarus says not to forget baby's bedroom furniture, which can off gas toxins and release flame retardant chemicals. She recommends an organic Green Guard certified mattress and organic bedding. Have any additional green proofing ideas? And I think that's all we got there, Bob, if I haven't messed it up enough already.
That is, and for all those listening, Wayne was not having a stroke.
I feel like I'm having a stroke. I can't breathe.
It might have seemed like it, but he's actually not. Maybe my chat will be working. For all of those listening, Don Wilson will be joining our show at 5:30. At 6:30. I'm sorry. I did email him a reminder. He didn't get back to me. I hope he got it, and I hope he remembers that he will be doing our show. But for those listening, our call-in number is 347-677-0699. I do want to put a shout-out. Dragon Fest is coming back to Southern California. The Martial Arts History Museum is bringing the old Dragon Fest back. Special guest and vendors list at Dragon Fest, and this they still have 15 weeks left. Before Dragon Fest actually happens, which it's on May 18th, 2014, at the Burbank Holiday Inn in Burbank, California. And they have four sections. They have a history section, an author section, a film section. Actually, they grew to five sections. They have a film section, arts and crafts section, and martial arts vendors. Now, I met with Michael Matsuda, the president and curator of the museum, when he screened Gung Pao Enter the Fist with Steve Odenkirk. Now, he told me that the first Dragon Fest that he brought back was going to be in the museum. Within 1 week, actually it was 4 days, we can't do this. And he changed the venue to a hotel. Now, the history section includes such notables as Lorenzo Lamas, Cynthia Rothrock, Richard Norton, Art Camacho, Jack Kubota, Kerry Ogawa Wong, James Hong, and actually had Richard Norton listed twice. The author section includes Doug Wong, Alan Woodman, Benny the Jet Urquidez, Peter Cunningham, Simon Ree, Lambert Chung, Sol Kaliwa, Don Baird, John Kring, Andrew Finelli. The film section will be including Fumio Demura, Shin Toyomada, Donnie Williams, Guerrilla Pictures, Johnny Ray Gasca from the film The Gathering. The arts and crafts section will have Paul Hui. He actually draws Homer. Mel Props, Connell Kidd, My Scent Image, Just Waggle Martial Arts Game, Alice Jewelry, 2K Customs, Tradition Shorts, or Traditions Shirts, Artistry by Ed Parker Jr. The martial arts vendors will include Sidekick Publications, Dynamic Dojo Radio, Valley Martial Arts Supplies, Kill Combat Instruments, and Showbiz. This is going to be a don't miss. The tickets are on sale. They are online. Visit michaelmatsuda.com. They're $25 a piece to get in. That is going to be an amazing show. They
sounds like it.
The numbers are going to be huge for this. Now we are going to move on to
Weird News.
In Utah, I think this ape must be pretty smart because in Utah, an ape predicts that the Seahawks will win the Super Bowl. As brought to us by the Associated Press, a Utah ape that has correctly picked the Super Bowl winner for six straight years predicted Thursday that the Seattle Seahawks will be the next NFL champion. Eli the ape ran into an enclosure Thursday morning and swiftly knocked down a papier-mâché helmet bearing the Seahawks logo, signaling his pick. This was brought to us by Erica Hansen of the Hogle Zoo in Salt Lake City. He made this pick without any hesitation, Hansen said. That could be bad news for the Bronco fans. The 13-year-old primate hasn't been wrong since 2006. Wow.
Wow.
last year, Eli charged out and knocked over a paper mache goal post decorated with the Ravens logo. Sure enough, the Ravens beat the 49ers 34-31. Eli's pick this year drew mixed reactions from the team, from his team of zookeepers. That includes Broncos fans. They are hoping that this is the first wrong year, Hansen said. After he made his prediction, Eli was joined by his mate Eve and daughter Akara and allowed to smash, play, and eat the paper mache helmet. Hansen said interest and excitement about Eli's Super Bowl pick has increased as his streak grows. This year, people have been asking daily, when's he making the pick? He's better than Vegas odds makers, Hansen said. Wow. Boy, this ape has been spot on for the past 6 years now, including this one. Weird laws this week come to us from Texas. One must acknowledge a supreme being before being able to hold a public office. The blue bonnet is the official. I know, right? The blue bonnet is the official song of the state flower. It is illegal to sell one's eye. That means if somebody has a fake eye, they can't sell it. I know. They just spoil it for everybody. A program has been created in the state that attempts to control the weather. Oh, I'd love to see that. The entire Encyclopedia Britannica is banned in Texas because it contains a formula for making beer at home.
Wow. Yeah, I guess they haven't heard about the internet down there.
No, I guess not. They're a little behind in Texas, I guess.
Well, yeah.
When two trains meet each other at a railroad crossing, each shall come to a full stop and neither shall proceed until the other one is gone. Wow. Well, I hope there's a switch at those railroad crossings because they could be there a while. It is illegal to take more than 3 sips of beer at a time while standing. Wow. Up to a felony charge can be levied for promoting the use of or owning more than... I'm going to rephrase this. I've got to rephrase this. I'll do this like I did on Maz or Ken's show. It is illegal to own more than 6 women-enhancing pleasuring devices. How's that?
That works good.
It is illegal for one to shoot a buffalo from the second story of a hotel. I really did not know that Texas had a buffalo problem. That is beyond me. It is illegal to milk another person's cow. Wow, really? A recently passed anti-crime law requires criminals to give their victims 24-hour notice, either orally or in writing, and to explain the nature of the crime to be committed. Wow.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
This is one. I'm going to get letters on this one. I'm going to get notes. I'm going to get angry people on this one. In the great state of Texas, homosexual behavior is a misdemeanor offense. Wow.
Wow.
And now I want to bring to everybody's attention that Wayne had said he was going to read the copy, so he didn't let me down, which I really appreciate, because I do not read copy before I go on. I do not know why. I don't look at it. I don't glance its way. I do nothing. And sometimes it shows and sometimes it doesn't. I should do what Wayne did, but how did that work out for you, Wayne?
Not too well, because for some reason my mouth wasn't working along with my brain.
Again, to all our callers or all our listeners, see, my brain wasn't working there either. To all our listeners, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And with that, we're actually running ahead of schedule. We're going to go on a 3-minute break for PSAs and to give us a chance to call our guest, and hopefully he picks up. But we'll be back with you in 3 minutes.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how.
Hello.
Teach them
we
how to
not
stop
available.
Bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better, and kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees,
we are
increased
not available
insurance
now.
Rates.
Please
nothing kills
call
a buzz
again.
Like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
Okay, we are back. I cannot get a hold of Don, however, but we're going to try again, and we're going to try him live. Let's call Mr. Wilson right now, and I'm going to verify I do have the right number, which I did right before the show like I always do. Rusty told me one thing today, and I really appreciated it, that she has faith in me, but I'm starting to lose faith in myself because every time she goes away, something gets jacked up on my end. I don't know what it is.
Well, she wasn't away last week, and we didn't. Oh, yes, we did. That was the week before, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was
yeah,
the week before.
Oh, that's
okay.
Right.
It's dialing. It's dialing. This time it dialed through. The last two turns it didn't. Let's see if Mr. Wilson answers the phone.
Hello, we are not available now. Please call again.
Oh, beautiful.
Good call.
She is not going out of town any longer.
No, she is going to lose complete faith in me, absolutely, and I can understand that.
yeah, we're sensing a pattern again.
I know. What is it with this? I don't get
this
at all. I've been advertising I even talked to his brother. So we're going to try again. And it has been the same message, so I know I haven't misdialed the number, and I took it right off his email. Let's see if we can get a hold of him this time. It is his home office. I wonder if his brother's online.
Hello, we are not available now. Please call again. Thank you for your call.
You know what, I'm going to try him until we keep getting a hold of him because, we, you know, last time we interviewed you for a little while.
I know. Oh, I think I lost you.
No, you're here. I'm here.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm here.
I started hearing crickets out there. Chirp, chirp.
Yeah, this isn't good. Every time Rusty goes away, something gets jacked up on the show. And I don't know why. I really don't. I'm actually trying to go over now.
Has it happened in the past when she's left? Is it any issues?
Hello?
Can I speak to Don, please?
Hello? Hello?
Yes, can I speak to Don? Yes, can I speak to Don, please? Amazing. We finally get through and we get hung up on.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
This is the problem with live radio. Rusty is just never going to let...
Yeah.
You know, she's just going to flip out and she hopes to call in. Maybe this is a bad thing. We're actually running for the first time ever ahead of schedule. And I don't know why she couldn't hear me, but she couldn't.
I can hear you perfect.
You can hear both of us, right?
Yeah, I can hear both of you, but I... Yeah.
Hello, we are not available now.
Uh-oh.
Please call again. Thank you for your call.
Well, we're going to talk amongst ourselves. I just got a message to James. I'm sorry,
okay.
His brother.
James.
There's nothing like freaking out though on live radio.
Yeah.
And I can't open the chat board. He just messaged me back. I'll try to get it. Okay. Good. Rusty, I'm sorry. I swear. But the one show that got really jacked up when she was out of town, she was still handling things. And she saw it wasn't me. We just could not get a hold of our guests. But she's gone through this before because, you know, she does another show.
Yeah.
She does the show called Modern Combat Masters.
Mm-hmm.
So she does this like twice a week. And this is why I freak out on occasion when she goes out of town because I do it once like every 2 months. So I forget things. Wow, let me go back on the studio again. Listeners, I am so sorry. This usually doesn't happen. We are usually way more professional than this.
Way more.
You've been on plenty of shows where you know that we're you typically on top of it, but why is that always when Rusty's here?
Now it's starting to involve me. This is the second time.
Yeah, this is true. Second time, our one guest just blew us off completely.
Yeah.
Completely. Said he was going to be late, no problem. He never went home.
I'll just never go home to answer my phone.
I think he had caller ID and saw that it was a New York number and said, I'm not going to talk to those
guys. Yeah, I've heard about these guys before. I'm not going to answer this one.
Now we you know what, we've had some great guests, Bill Wallace, Cecil Peoples, we've had some wonderful guests. Let's try Mr. Wilson again. It disappeared on me. There it is.
I hope the lady doesn't answer the phone. What do you want? Stop hanging up.
Yeah, really, huh?
Yeah.
That would suck.
Hello?
Is this Don?
Hello? Is this Don? Is this Robert?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Robert. Man, I've got, you know what? I apologize. I've got everything shut off in this house because of the Super Bowl. Hold on one second. Let me get behind my desk.
Okay.
Hold on.
Sure. Well, to our listeners, we did get a hold of Don Wilson, so I can stop flipping out.
I guess I must not have given you my cell number, man. I apologize because I finally, my brother reached me on my cell number.
Well, I messaged
Well, that must have been how he got. You got a hold of him, and he called him, and I heard. I just happened to hear the cell phone because I got the Super Bowl cranked up real loud, and I'm having unbelievable problems. I've been shut off of the Super Bowl twice today. I don't know what it is. It's something. It's online though, but it's some. The high def station broke down. Then I went to regular TV, and then that shut down.
Oh no!
Well, Robert, when is the interview?
Now?
Right now?
Right now.
Well, let's get on the air then.
We are on the air and we are live with the great Don Wilson. And I do want Don. Who are you rooting for?
I have not. This is a completely unusual thing for me. This is just a little quirky thing about me. When I played football, which I played in high school and college, I watched every game. As soon as I quit a sport, though, I lose 99% of my interest in watching it. I have not watched a Super Bowl in 20 years. I had no idea who was even playing. All I did was turn it on and start watching it. And I said, you know what, I'm going to watch the Super Bowl so I can at least talk about the game the next day. But, you know, it's just a shutout. It's just more, you know, Denver, it's just, you know, I don't know if they scored yet, but it was something like 29-0, so the game is not a you know, a good game.
No, they're never going to come back from that. It would have been great for Manning, and the only reason I wanted Manning to do it is it would have been Super Bowl history where one quarterback took two separate teams to the Super Bowl and won.
Well, you know what? They were all hyped up to talk about him. All the announcers and everything, I'm sure they knew all his stats. I mean, they were all prepared for his glorious game today, but it didn't turn out that way, unfortunately.
Wow.
For him.
And I'm sorry, you know, our host could not be with us tonight. She's actually at an Al DeGasco seminar in Oregon, but she does send her best. And she's going to be trying to call in, but now I know, Don, you grew up in Florida. Tell us about your background, about you growing up. I know your father was an engineer at NASA. Tell us.
That's why we moved. I was 5 years old, and we moved to Florida from Illinois. I was born in Alton, Illinois. But I don't have any really memories of that. Basically, all my childhood was in Florida.
Ooh, very cool.
Coast.
Okay.
It was Cocoa Beach. My dad worked at the Space Center. That's why he... But that was the place to be in the 60s if you were an engineer. Because, you know, we hired only the best of the best to be at the Kennedy Space Center because at the time it was Cape Canaveral, but John F. Kennedy was president, and his big... you know, the way we were going to beat communism, according to him, is to prove we're a superior system, and he had what they called the space race, if you can remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So that they hired what they considered the top scientists and engineers in the country, and they went to work at the Kennedy Space Center, and that's really what I was supposed to do, according to my dad. I was going to follow in his footsteps, and I was an engineering major, and I was prepared to do that, but then a little strange thing called full contact karate started in 74, and, well, I was going to take a couple of semesters off, and 28 years later, Robert, I was still fighting.
Oh, that is too funny. Now, from what I read, Don, your brother, James, actually started into kung fu prior to you. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, he's the one who got me into martial arts, or I would probably have never done it because I was so involved in other sports, I wouldn't even have thought to try martial arts. But he was, I guess his original art was Yoshikai Karate. He was Japanese. And somewhere along the line, he switched over and started studying Kung Fu and became a Kung Fu instructor. So he was actually a black belt and had his own school before I took my first lesson. And he's the one that introduced me to martial arts. And I started out under Chuck Merriman in New London, Connecticut. And I started in coaching.
Now, is James quite a bit older than you?
No, he's only a year and a half older than me.
Oh, wow, okay. And, you know, us old guys really do hate you because you're in your 50s and you still look like you're in your 20s and move like
you're
in your
20s. Well, I'm 59, so I'm in my late – I've only got this year of 50 left in me, and then I'll be in my 60s.
Wow, wow. Oh, yeah, so like I said, you suck.
Well, you know what? The odd thing is, and I was asked to talk myself and Cynthia Rothrock, Michael J. White. We were asked to talk at the longevity convention in Las Vegas, the anti-aging longevity convention, one of the biggest ones in the world. And we spoke about, you know, why I was there, why I believed that what they were doing was relevant. And I told them when I was 45, I believe it was, yeah, about 45, I came out of retirement. And I had aches and pains, Robert. I'm telling you, everything that the doctors predicted, the shoulder injuries, the hip, I thought I'd have to have my hip replaced, ankle, knee injuries. Everything was hurting me from my years of, you know, contact sports, football, basketball, track, wrestling, kickboxing, boxing. After doing that all my life and trying to come back at 45, I was really in pain a lot of the time. And I did a couple of things, well, actually many, several different things, and by the time I hit 59, I have absolutely no pain anywhere. I told my wife this week, I was at the gym, hit the heavy bag, jumping a rope, lifting weights, nothing hurts. Everything has completely healed. And, of course, everybody at the longevity convention, then after I told them I changed a few things about my lifestyle and it all went away, they were all mobbing me to find out what it is I did. But it's nothing, you know, it's nothing, there's no miracles. It's not about that. The science is all out there. The products are out there. The, what did they say, the truth is out there on X-Files? Yeah, it's all out there. I just did my own research and my own, I wouldn't call it a totally experimenting, but I mean, I took several different kinds of vitamins before I settled on certain ones. But, the food supplements and certain lifestyle changes have to be made. Otherwise, our bodies just start breaking down when they hit 60. Whereas mine, honest to God, here's a bizarre thing that probably could get me in medical books. My eyes are getting better now. I used to have to wear my glasses to drive and to read and to watch TV to get on my computer. Well, I hardly ever wear them now. My doctor is all backed up by my eye doctor. He hasn't given me a new prescription in 3 years, and he says my eyes are getting better. Now, what could be the result of that? I never even heard of something like that.
Wow. And now, what got you involved with the longevity convention? I mean, you and Cynthia
great. It was a friend of Arnold Schwarzenegger's, and I got to meet some fitness people, and matter of fact, me and Chuck Norris, we actually did a TV show with Arnold for one of his shows. We were all three together announcing a show that he had, his Arnold Classic, I think they call it, in Ohio. And one of the guys from there, he's a doctor, he asked me if I would take a look at this convention that he put on, so Cynthia and I went, and it was great. And now we're going to go every year.
Oh, wow. You know, Wayne, I am hogging the mic. Do you have any questions that you'd like to shoot John's way? Because usually it's Rubens who's hogging the mic, and I'm sitting there quiet. Go ahead.
First off, we go to that every year, the Arnold Classic. Uh-huh. We have a blast that we, go in there. This year, a good friend of mine is going to be hosting the kickboxing events, Doug Yates. Really looking forward to it. Are you going to be there this year?
You know what? I know that Toki Hill is one of the guys that arranges the any celebrities or martial artists that come to support it. So I may. I kind of got out of doing it there for a while. My manager died, my business manager, and that was my contact to going to the event. But, if my schedule is clear and, Toki gets a hold of me or whoever it is responsible for bringing in the celebrities, I'd love to go and support it. I mean, it's only a good thing for the martial arts.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you this. What What was your most memorable experience in the ring?
Gosh. Wow. You know what? 28 years of so many things. You want a... I think it was a good thing because I'm fighting. You know, I did a lot of fights. One of the things that distinguished me from a lot of champions is I fought under every system of rules they had. Muay Thai, the full contact, the Japanese kickboxing. I went everywhere, and I fought the people in their hometowns. For example, I fought the Italian champion in Rome. I fought the Thai champion in Bangkok. I fought a British champion in London. Anyway, I can remember one time specifically I fought the German champion, and actually he's European, but he was German, and I fought him in Berlin in 1989. And I, on points, probably lost 9 straight rounds on points because I knew I would not outpoint him. If I didn't knock him out, I was going to lose. So uncharacteristic for me, I was taking a lot of shots to get in to score mine. And I finally knocked him out in the 9th round. And when he went down, there were, at the time, 10,000 Germans screaming. All of a sudden, there's dead silence. And I mean, you could have heard a pin drop. Then I heard some screaming and cheering for me, which was unusual. And what I found out was, what happened was, at the time, we had this is before the wall came down. We had troops, American troops, in Berlin at that time. We had a base there. And they were American soldiers that had bet on me. Not because they knew me, but because, it was American versus a German, and they were American soldiers, and of course they're going to bet on the American. And they were all came up to me after the fight telling me they won money off me. And that was a memorable thing, because I remember it was dead silence when he went down. It was a 3 knockdown rule, and he got dropped 3 times in the 9th round. And because what are Germans going to do when they see their champion, who's been winning the whole fight, is knocked out like that? You know, they just were speechless. And then I heard the cheering. It stood out like a sore thumb because there was only, there were only a few Americans there, but I could hear them cheering for me and found out after the fight what was going on.
Wow.
That's cool.
Now,
that's
you
really
had
cool.
told me, Don, a couple weeks ago, you ran this story by me that I thought was really funny. You went and fought, I think it was in Europe, somebody that was just bragging around town how he was just going to whip your butt.
Oh, that was an exhibition. That was not supposed to be a fight, Robert. That, when I'm contracted to do an exhibition, I do not train. I mean, I go, I do a little jogging or whatever. It's not a fight. I go there, and we wear 16-ounce gloves and headgear, and we go very easy. That's what's happened in 30 years of me doing it. That's all that's ever happened. And all the other champions tell me, don't do exhibitions because they'll try to knock you out. But it never happened to me. Until the guy I told you about, that guy came out swinging from the first of all, he had 8-ounce gloves, which is, even in a pro fight, we fight with 10s. But he is chunking bombs with these little gloves. And, I knew. I mean, there's an etiquette in the gym. If I spar a guy one round, I know if he's there to work or if he's there to try to prove something. You know, I mean, how many thousands of rounds do you think I've sparred? So I know the difference. And I could tell the guy was trying to decapitate me. And the German guy that was the middleman that set up the thing said, Mr. Wilson, we can just leave right now. We don't have to finish it. It wasn't supposed to be a fight. It's supposed to be an exhibition for fun. We'll just leave. And I looked at him. Now, what would that have looked like, though? The guy comes out the first round, throws all of these bombs at me, and then the dragon just climbs out before the end of the exhibition. It would have looked like, in my mind anyway, the guy handed me my rear end. So what I did was I said, no, I'll take care of this. Bell rings the second round. I throw an uppercut, of course, not really to hit him because I'm getting ready to hit him with the left hook. But his head pops up. And, that's what I'm waiting for. So all you have to do is think one or two moves in advance. And I can't brag too much because the guy was a horrible fighter. It wasn't like he was a great athlete. He was a local guy, not a good fighter. It was an easy, quick left hook to the chin, knocked him right out. I did tell you, if I told you the story, that I started feeling guilty up until the time I had breakfast and the waitress told me that he had been telling everybody he was going to knock me out. So it was not an accident. He was actually just being a jerk. And then since then, it's never happened again. I did an exhibition last year in just November. I did one in the Czech Republic. And the guy went real easy. I mean, the guy was probably a 225-pound young heavyweight, and if he wanted to make it a war, it could have been a war for me. But like everyone else, he went easy.
And that was your only time that you had somebody try to take your head off at an exhibition?
That's it. That's the only. That's
wow.
The only time. It has never happened. Now, it did happen one time in a training situation where I was teaching a seminar, and the guy didn't try. It, basically, what he was doing was he was trying to say that sidekicks are in effect. Well, he said it. Sidekicks don't work on him. So, and he was a big guy, heavyweight. This was in Italy. And I threw a little short sidekick in his stomach, knocked the wind out of him. But that's still a little bit different. I just let him know. I mean, I can tell him all day that the sidekick is a formidable weapon, but he just wasn't going to believe it. So I just put a little bit. I didn't do, you know, I wasn't trying to break his ribs or anything, but I just gave him a little bit of a sidekick and knocked the wind out of him. And that was the only other time that I was forced or coerced or encouraged to go a little harder. Just to make a point. And
you know, there's
turned
two
out
people I'd never do that to, Don. I'd never tell you your sidekicks don't work, just like I'd never tell Bill Wallace his round kick looks like crap.
Well, look, it's no technique. Well, you know what? About Bill's round kick, that'd be a good thing, because I sparred him. First met him in 78. And I think that was around his prime. He had some experience. You know, he was a great wrestler. In college, you know, I mean, he was not he was into the grappling arts in the beginning of his martial arts. He was a judo man. He only got into the traditional karate style stuff when he hurt his knee. Then he could no longer
right.
do judo, and he could only kick on one side, and so he developed that one side. So I started sparring him back when he was, you know, I consider it was his prime, 78. You know, he retired in 80, and there's nobody, and I've been all over the world. I've fought all over. There is nobody that has ever been able to match his speed, control, and accuracy of his kicking. I've never seen it.
Absolutely. Now, Don, in fights, I've noticed, because I saw one of my instructors went for an amateur fight, they embellish sometimes the record. Was your record ever embellished in the ring?
No, actually, it's been diminished because they took some of my fights off my record. because they said, well, that's not the same sport because there were no ring ropes, you know. Because I fought in the days when they had just mats. They were just. In fact, my first fight was on a concrete floor, and they wanted to take that loss off my record because they said, well, that wasn't really. The sport we're talking is kickboxing. It's got to be fought in a ring. And I said, well, they didn't have rings back then. I actually fought on a concrete floor. But I said, I lost that fight, and I'm not going to just take it off because it's a loss. So, yeah, I know some people embellish their records. I guess they put some bogus fights on there, but the opposite for me, I mean, I've got in fact, if I went my fight record, I have 9 boxing matches. I should add my boxing matches. But there's no kicking, so it's not actually kicking. But I think today the way we look at fights, we just call it mixed martial arts. I mix the boxing with the kickboxing. And had they had MMA, I would have done that.
Right. When you grew up doing martial arts, you pretty much did everything. You did Muay Thai.
Well, I was a wrestler in college before I was a kickboxer. Before I got serious about kickboxing, I wrestled in college. And my second year, I was fourth in the state of Florida at 177, so I really took to wrestling very quickly. Submission would have been just another aspect of martial arts.
Right, absolutely. What is your actual weight class?
Well, I fought in the beginning at what they called middleweight in kickboxing, which is under 165. Then they went to, I believe, 170, and I fought at 170. And finally, I won my first world title as light heavyweight for the WKA, and that was 175. And as it turns out, even though I did fight, you know, cruiserweights and heavyweights, my best weight was 175. I believe every fighter will go up and down in weight depending on where the money is, but everybody's got their optimum weight, and my optimum weight where I felt the best and the strongest was 175.
Wow. Now, how many world titles have you actually held?
Well, in the Guinness Book of World Records, I'm listed as having more than any kickboxer in history, and that was 11. And that was, of course, different associations and different weight divisions. But one of the reasons why I was able to do that, though, is that I was a free agent, unlike the UFC where you sign a contract or like the PK, they wanted people to sign contracts. But most of the associations do not want their champions to fight for other associations. They want to try to build up their own champions, and they only fight within their own organizations. And most of the fighters, as it turns out, that's what they did. Whether they were under contract or not, they basically would win a title under a set of rules. And if you were around in the 70s, you know, kickboxing had many different versions of the sport. And they would just settle in on one style, and then they would defend all their titles in their hometown so they wouldn't have to risk a bad decision. And that's kind of what the common champion in kickboxing did in the 70s and 80s. But I went to every, like I said, I went to everybody's backyard and fought under whatever rules they wanted. And I think that distinguished me in my fight experience from a lot of the other champs.
I think you're absolutely right. Now, did you actually study professionally? Did you actually study Muay Thai before you went over to Thailand?
No. I just watched how they did it. Bruce Lee did a movie once where he had to fight a Muay Thai guy or something, and he went and watched a few fights and then Ward did his own thing. And I kind of did it myself. I was in Cocoa Beach, Florida. There were no Muay Thai trainers there. There's nobody that could teach me anything. I basically did a lot of things by mistake. I mean, I had people with big, what they call bow staffs, hitting me in the legs, thinking I could condition my legs. And then after a while I decided, you know what, all it's doing is hurting my legs. I'm not conditioning them. I'm just getting sore and limping around. So I did a lot of things probably wrong. I did it the hard way. I learned by trial and error. And, of course, it would have been better if I'd had some former Thai champion with 100 pro fights teaching me how to block the kicks and how to counter them and that. But literally, you know, I learned on my own. I just, by, you know, watching them and then fighting. You know, I had several fights against Thais in Hong Kong and fought the best fighter in Thailand in his stadium in Bangkok. So, and I never had troubles with the leg kicks, by the way. They gave up trying to hurt me to the legs because that was never going to be a way that I was going to lose a fight in Thailand. But after a while, they thought maybe the elbows or the knees or whatever. But, you know, after my I beat Adipon Fontan, 84, I was never offered another fight. I beat their fourth-rated fighter, and that was in Hong Kong, and then they never offered me another fight. That's the only reason I didn't fight more Thais.
Oh, wow. Wayne, you got anything for
John?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. How did you end up starting your acting career?
Well, you know what? I'm pretty experienced with that now, too. I've been doing it now since 85. I met Chuck Norris back in the late 70s. He came to one of my fights, and we became friends. And if you guys were around, which I'm sure you were, when you remember the Chuck Norris movies, he used to do a lot of the martial art movies. And he worked for one company because he had signed exclusively with a company called Canon Films. And Chuck was a former fighter who made the transition, and when I met him, he's the first guy in the business, in the entertainment business, that suggested when I was ready to retire from the ring that I should try to move out to L.A. and get an agent and take acting lessons and try to be an actor. Chuck was the first guy in the business that suggested it to me. And I thought, well, you know, Chuck was a fighter. You know, he's not like Van Damme, Seagal, Jet Li, Jackie Chan, where if they had never done movies, well, you and I wouldn't know their names.
Right.
If Chuck had never done a line of dialogue, we still would all know the guy because he was a great fighter in the 60s.
Absolutely.
So since I was a kickboxer, Chuck thought, well, maybe Don could do it. And I moved out to L.A. in 1985, May of 85, and starred in my first movie in 1988. It was called Blood Fist. Came out right after Blood Sport for Van Damme.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, so far I've starred in 30 movies. And I've done cameos in other projects, other movies and things like that. I'll do that for friends and stuff. But I'm saying as a film star, I've starred in 30 films. So I was able to translate.
That's awesome.
You know, to have a second career, basically. And the
Absolutely.
Fun part is, I never thought about being an actor. It only came about through the martial arts. And lucky for me, I do martial art movies. So I'm still involved. It's still all the martial arts friends of mine are there, and people who see my movies are either just martial art movie fans or they are actual martial artists themselves. So I was able to get a second career that is still in the you know, what do they say? If you love something, it's not real work. Well,
right.
If I love the martial arts, so it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Now, Don, you've done so much work in front of the camera, but I understand you've also done some work behind the camera. Can you tell us about your transition to the producing, if you've ever directed, that sort of thing?
Yes. Yeah. I haven't directed because there's so many good directors. I mean, it would be egotistical for me to say, well, I'm going to act in the movie, produce it, and be the director. You know, to me, it's the way I became a producer was on my third movie. Roger Corman, who was the first producer to give me a chance in the business, he suggested I come on as a co-producer so that I have control over the quality of the film, and that would include picking the director, you know, casting it, editing the movie. You know, I mean, I work on every creative aspect of the films at this point. I even go to the Cannes Film Festival and help sell the films. So I am now beyond creating them, but I help market them and sell them. And that was from Roger Corman. And anybody who knows anything about him knows that he's one of the icons in the film business. You know, he gave just about everybody their start in this business. James Cameron worked first with him, Ron Howard, Martin Scorsese, actors, De Niro, Jack Nicholson, Stallone. They all got their start with Roger Corman. He's like, you know, well, they call him the King of the Bees. And, you know, my movies are would be considered B movies. They're not in the A-list or studio system. They're independent features, lower budget, and, you know, that's the guy that taught me the business.
Well, it was really funny. Years ago, Don, I was watching this movie with Graciel Casillas, and it actually had Burt Ward in it, the guy who played Robin in the original Batman TV series.
Oh, yeah.
And
I consider that a B movie.
And I went up to somebody and said, yeah, I just saw a movie with Graciel Casillas in it, and it was a B movie. And the guy's face lit up, and he says, wow, I didn't know she did those kind of movies. So she went from a mainstream to a porn star.
Well, I think that's a different category all its own. But, no, the A and the B movies came about years ago in the 50s, and here's the way, because it's really a misnomer now. The term B movie doesn't really exist in a practical sense. There was an A film which you paid to see. Then, before the A film, they had what they called B movies, a movie that was not advertised, that had stars you had not heard of, lower budget, and it would just appear as a preliminary movie to the real movie that you paid to see. And this was a thing, I believe, I don't know when it was started, but I believe it was going on in the 50s when Roger Corman first started making movies. So that's why they called him, his nickname was King of the B Movies. And he made most of those movies. You know, these were the days in the black and white, you know, they had sound. It was after they had sound, but it was still primitive filmmaking, and Roger Corman made the very low budget movies. So today, a B movie would actually be a movie. It could be a $30 million movie, but it would be a B movie if it's made outside the studio system. So it would be any movie not made by Warner Brothers or 20th Century Fox or Sony or any of the major studios would be considered a B movie today. You know, they had a term in the 90s. They call it direct to video. Now it's direct to DVD, and then there's made for cable. And my movies, I guess you'd call them in those categories would be accurate. I was a direct to video star in the 90s, and then DVD and cable in the 2000s. And you know, hopefully one day I'll cross that studio line.
Now, were you under any? Now, were all your movies independent? Or were you ever under contract with any of the big guys?
No, not all my movies. Because, like, I was in Batman Forever, and that movie was the highest-grossing movie of the year. If you saw the Batman Forever, I had a fight scene with Robin. I had a skull face, and
yeah.
I was just asked by Joel Schumacher to come on and do one fight scene and leave, which is what I did. And he just thought that in those days. He thought you shouldn't do a movie without a little martial arts in it. So he wrote one scene in for me. We shot that thing in 4 days, and there's like no action in it. It's not, you know, nothing against Joe Schumacher, but you know, he didn't know how to shoot a martial arts film. That's for sure.
Now, did you do any writing, Don?
I have done some because the concepts of the movies. I don't write the scripts. There are good screenwriters here in Hollywood, and all you got to do is find them, and they're, you know, a lot of them here, and they're very talented, and they work hard, and so I don't believe I should be out writing scripts. There's plenty of guys better at it than me, but I do come up with ideas for films, and then I'll get a screenwriter and pay them and have them write a treatment, and on the basis of the treatment, I've actually raised millions of dollars to make movies. So that's all you really need. You don't, even on a verbal pitch, I actually gave a verbal pitch for a movie called Out for Blood, and I got the money to make that movie, and it was an HBO world premiere. It ended up being one of the top four movies that I've done, and it was just an idea I had, and I don't want to use this term because I don't want to get in trouble, but rip off a movie called Death Wish. Do you remember that movie, Death Wish, with Charles Bronson?
With Charles Bronson, yeah.
Yes, I actually went out and I bought the script to that, and I read it, and I said, man, this is a great idea. If we just get rid of the guns and just have them use martial arts, it would be a great idea for a movie. And I did a movie called Out for Blood. It was an HBO world premiere back in the 90s, and it was about a guy whose family gets killed, and then he goes out at night, and he gets revenge on the bad guys, but he uses martial arts, not guns. So, yeah, it was a verbal pitch. I just told the guy the idea I had. He liked it, gave me the money, hired a writer. We made the movie. It was a success. So you can go from an actor to a producer very easily in the independent films. I think in the studio system, I think it would be a lot tougher. Because, you know, they're going to have to trust you with like $100 million. I mean, that's what they spend on these studio films today, $100 million and up. So,
right.
I'm not sure how many kickboxers are going to let get $100 million to make a movie.
I remember when we were talking to Steve Odekirk a few weeks ago. I forgot what budget.
I went to see his movie. It was great. I had seen it originally when it came out, but that was some years ago. You know, I forgot most of the plot of it, but it was still fun entertainment. That's for sure.
Oh, it was. But he said the budget on it was like almost nothing. It was like $5 or $9 million to make the whole thing.
Oh, look! But now remember, now those are $9 million year 2000 dollars too. You know, $9 million today is worth a lot less. You know,
right.
Today,
that
$9 million, it would be worth probably, you know, $12 million or something. But still, that's a decent budget to a normal, I mean, to an independent, that would be a big budget. But to the studios, when the average studio film is over $60 million, the average, and if it's an action, it's going to be over $100 million, but $60 million, so when you say $9 million, I made a movie, studios love you. I'm sure they were impressed with that number.
I'm sure they were. I absolutely agree. If I, you look
but I'd make,
it, look
I'd make nine Don Wilson movies with that money. there's a cutoff point for SAG. There's a cutoff, and it's like 1.2 million. So everybody tries to get under 1.2. That's what we all try to do. And if you could do a movie under 1.2, after worldwide sales and everything, I mean, it's like a guaranteed moneymaker. So that's what our movies are. Even though they sell them sometimes as $3 million movies, to my knowledge, the average would be a million. Sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more.
Oh, very cool. Now, who's your favorite co-star?
You guys want to get me in trouble or something, man? Did you girls hear that? The rest of them will be out there. Let me tell you, I got along with all the co-stars. They were all, first of all, I'm involved in the casting, so I'm going to already cast somebody that I think is appropriate and my male audience is going to enjoy. So that we already start off with a positive beginning with the casting of my leading, our female leads. But they've all been great. You know, I can't, maybe it's partly because they realize that I was involved in casting them and they're thankful for getting the part and so they're, you know, friendly. But, you know, on my third film, I met my girlfriend, who is now my wife. So if you can watch all my movies except the first two. I actually did date both leading ladies of my first two films. But on my third film, I met my wife, and she was my makeup artist, and we ended up getting married and having kids. And so I never dated any of those other actresses.
and she wasn't even an actress. She was...
Makeup artist, right. Well, look,
oh,
you
wow.
can't take... Look, it's like this, though. you can't take the same leading lady from movie to movie, right? Think about it. I mean, I have to have a new one every time. Well, when it's the makeup artist, they can go from movie to movie. So it actually worked out better. I'm not the only star out here that actually married their makeup artist. You know, there's others.
Wow, that is so
good. It's not that uncommon.
How long have you guys been married?
Well, we got married in 96, but we started dating in 1990, so we've been together since 1990. But, you know, I was already married before. Matter of fact, I had just gone through a divorce when I met Kathleen, my current wife, and so I was a little gun-shy. It took me 6 years before I felt like getting married again.
You know, I don't blame you. That's like taking a sip of sour milk, putting it back in the fridge, and hoping it's going to be better the next day.
You know what? You know what? It doesn't get better, John. Robert, I tell you, right now, from experience, that milk doesn't get better.
Yeah, it's more sour than next, huh?
Right. And, you know, when something's sour, it's only got one direction to go.
That's right. More sour. Well, I've been married for 28 years. I have two great kids. I'm very happy with it. Thank you very much. Back day after Valentine's Day. This is the part of your Don I really hate because we just got over Christmas. My son's birthday is Tuesday. My daughter's birthday is next Sunday. My wife's birthday just passed. Then there's Valentine's Day and our anniversary.
Oh, my gosh. You know what that means to me, though? That means to me you're going to be eating a lot of junk, bad foods, ice cream, cake, going to big dinners, having family over. No.
That's right, and I'm going to be eating rice just to afford it.
Well, we're supposedly in a recession, but I put something on my Facebook because just some statistic. When you go online, you can look this up. More Rolls Royces have been sold, and Bentleys been sold in the last couple of years than ever before. They're at record sales for Rolls Royces and Bentleys, which is, you know, minimum $200,000 base sticker price. And
yeah.
Exxon Oil has made more profit than ever before, ever since 9/11, excuse me. They've made more profits, even in counting inflation, than ever before. So it is not the richest of the rich. The top 1% is not in a recession. They're in a boom town. It's a consolidation of wealth. The middle class put all their money into bailing out all these companies where these guys, you know, basically mismanaged them, and they were all going bankrupt, and we bailed them all out. They didn't suffer for their bad business decisions.
No, that's very true. There was no punishment. There was no...
What they did, they wrote the laws when it was deregulated. They knew exactly which regulations they needed to get out of the way so that their things, while unethical, are not illegal. For example, it won the Oscars, as a matter of fact. They gave these money managers money from, let's say, the teacher's retirement or the fireman's retirement funds. And all their money... all that money, that's retirement money, into what the executive called literally shit stock. And
mm-hmm.
then he bet against the stock that it would go bad, and then he made the $300 million profits off of it going. There's a bet you can do in Wall Street that you can bet a stock's going to go down. And that's what they did. It did not look like they were going to go down because they had so much cash, surplus cash, but they got the surplus cash because this guy put it in. So you see how they manipulated it for their own personal benefit while losing the money for the teachers and the firemen, the police, all their retirement funds went under. Mm-hmm. Real estate market crashed. All these horrible economic things were happening, yet these managers, money managers and executives, were getting bonuses and reaping the benefits. And, none of them went to jail. Look, it took them 40 years to get Madoff. Remember, Madoff... he supposedly stole $70 billion. And
right.
It 40 years he got away with it. Now, Donald Trump says one man can't spend $70 billion or hide it. It takes an army of people, Donald Trump said. Where's the army that's going to jail? His sons who didn't go to jail, one of them committed suicide, they claim. But let me ask you this. If you steal $70 billion, you don't think there's somebody out there that might not be very happy about that?
They claim
he committed suicide, but I don't think all of a sudden he got guilty feelings after 40 years.
Right.
You know?
No, I think he vanished.
Yeah. Look, when you're that wealthy, you can make it look like suicide. That's an easy thing to do. Right?
Yep.
I mean, you know, the guy's dead, and they say, oh, he felt guilty, so he shot himself. Or did. you know, there's some strange things that went on with the whole stock market crash, and nothing against Obama, but he surrounded himself with what they call Wall Street insiders. Now, those people are not going to go after anybody because they actually were involved in this big Ponzi schemes and ripoffs themselves. So they're not going to be... But, you know, anyway, we don't better not get talked on politics because people say, yeah, man, you're so passionate about it, you should run for office. I said, I'll never run for office. I'll be killed in 5 minutes. Are you kidding me?
Well, Don, we have a caller. Can you take a caller?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey,
let me bring your mic live. Area code 818, first three numbers, 284. You're on live with Don Wilson.
Hey, this
Hi.
Is Don's brother, James.
Oh,
hey,
my brother.
James,
well, you know, I'm
Hello?
Yep. It's my brother James.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind Don to talk about his movie company, about co-producing the movie The Martial Arts Kid with me and Cheryl Wheeler, and about the nutrition products with Genesis and Traditions and our apparel company Traditions.
Yeah, well, he's right. I got a new company called New Ark Entertainment, a film company making the first movie is called Blood Raid. It's kind of a cop actioner with a vampire twist, and then there's a PG-13 movie I'll be working on with my brother and his company, Traditions and Genesis, and that movie is called The Martial Art Kid. That will be a PG-13, kind of a Karate Kid meets Mr. and Mrs. Smith kind of a movie with me and Cynthia Rothrock. And what else did you mention? Oh, yeah, I'm endorsing a health product called Genesis Pure, and what else? And my brother's company and mine, Traditions with a Z. You can check it online to see what kind of it's not just T-shirts because we now have hoodies and we're going to have hats and all kinds of things. But it's called Traditions with a Z, and it's a U.S. Traditions.us is the website. So any of your viewers want to check it out, it's Traditions with a Z.us.
Well, I did mention it earlier because I named the vendors for Dragon Fest this year.
Oh, great!
I just didn't know you and your brother were involved with Traditions. That is very cool. So you're going to be displaying now. I don't know if I should ask both of you or not, but were you at the original Dragon Fest when it was run by?
Oh, absolutely! I went every year. I love that thing.
It was
a lot of fun. I like any event where I can go and see all my martial arts friends. All in one place. I mean, because while we work together and we've known each other and we all enjoy a passion for the martial arts, you hardly ever run into them, you know. And I can go there and sit with Gene LaBelle and Benny Urquidez and, you know, just all the actors. And it's just a blast. I think anybody who goes to Dragon Fest, this next one, is going to have fun.
Oh, absolutely. I've got a booth there. We're going to broadcast live from there.
That's going to be great. You're going to have everybody coming to your booth.
Oh, yeah, I mean, everybody, Richard Norton, all those guys that have been on the show in the past that really have a passion, they're good friends. And, you know, Don, I feel very fortunate. I've had people like you, Richard Norton, Bill Wallace. These guys have no egos, and I'm really thrilled that I've gotten the quality of guests on this show. In fact, Bill said to me, he said, you know what? There was no master, there was no grandmaster when I was coming up in the arts. There was only sensei, but you call me Bill. And, you know, there's certain people you just don't do that to, like him or Bill Riyazaki. It's yes, sensei. He's just been around so long.
Well, you know, when I was in 72 when I started martial arts, there was only a handful of people that would allow somebody to call them grandmaster and master. And today, I mean, everybody's a master. In other words, the law of supply and demand. The more of anything there are, the less each is worth, and that's true in anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when you've got, if you had, let's say, six living grandmasters or 16 living grandmasters, any number today, when there's thousands, they're each worth 1,000th the respect or the credibility of their title is that much less worthy because everybody's got one. I remember I was in, I believe it was Tampa, with Bill Wallace, signing autographs, and they called a guy on stage that was, I think he was like 25 years old, and they called him Master so and so or Grandmaster so and so. And I looked at Bill you're a Grandmaster if you actually have a style that's an internationally accepted and proven credible style. You're not a Grandmaster just because
exactly.
You know, you got one karate school in Tampa, Florida, and you're 25 years old. It's almost like a running joke with me and my friends. You know, I will say this though: I am the grandmaster of one thing, and I defy anyone to deny this. I am the grandmaster of procrastination.
Yeah,
that is my title, and I hold it with pride. And but other than that, I prefer people just to call me Don. Not grandmaster or this or that. The dragon's a nickname that I got from fighting. It still follows me around, but just a nickname.
While we're on the subject, how did you get that nickname from fighting?
Well, the style of kung fu I studied was white dragon. That's what my brother studied, and it was Pai Lung kung fu, white dragon style. And when I was in the ring, I was in the locker room actually before my very first fight in 1974. The ring announcer came in. He was getting everybody's ring name. I didn't even know what a ring name was. And he said, well, you know, like Smoking Joe Frazier, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, whatever. And I said, Dom the Dragon Wilson. So I thought about it for about 4 seconds. And that four-second decision ended up being the only thing I'm known as 40 years later. If you say Don Wilson, they'll think it's Jack Benny's radio announcer. But the only other famous Don Wilson would be me, which would be Dom the Dragon Wilson. So,
wow.
If you leave the dragon off, nobody knows who you're talking about. But it actually followed me throughout my fight career, and now it's on all the movie posters.
Oh, very cool. Well, we have another caller. This is my my little sister, because like me, she is actually vertically challenged, just like the rest of us. I'm going to bring on the host of the show. She must be done with the seminar at this time. I am going to bring her live on the air, Rusty.
Vertically challenged.
Now, wait a minute. Let me get this name right. This is Rousty?
Rusty.
Rusty. Like, oh, okay. Rusty. Well, good to meet you, Rusty.
Good to meet you, too. Thanks for joining us on Dynamic Dojo.
Well, I'm very happy to be here, and luckily, my brother called my cell phone because I was sitting there watching the Super Bowl. Although, do not feel bad. If it was a game that was one or two points either way, I might be a little bit trying to get through the interview quickly, but this was just – you guys know what the game was like. It's just a landslide one way, so I'm sure nothing's changed.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, well –
It was crazy. We were like, oh, well, look at that. Yay, Seattle.
Not much of a game. But, Rusty, you normally host these then, right? You're the radio announcer?
I'm normally me and Steve Robert, we normally both host this show.
Oh, okay.
I guess I'm considered the chief host, but I was out, so Bob had taken over the helm. And then when the game started, everyone didn't, leave the – seminar venue, so we just sat around and watched the game, and then I went, well, it's over. We won. I'm gonna go call now. So I missed everything up until now, so
well, we basically just went over my history. I think that's what we did. We just kind of went over my martial art history, movie history, how I started out, but then we just briefly wrapped up just now the what I've got going on right now, the movies and the clothing company. So anything you want to ask is fair game.
Very cool. I unfortunately
last time a guest
questions.
Told us that, so Don, we asked him a question, and they said, nope, that's off limits.
Well, look, you can ask. I'm not saying my answer's going to be killing, but I mean, anybody, they can ask any questions. I don't say, don't ask about this or don't ask about, anything specific. I take these things pretty casually. And
now, are you going to be at the Masters again this year?
You mean the Masters, Dan Hecht is...
Yeah,
I will be there, but there is actually I think he's having one in Texas, which I'll be going to.
Right, that one
Jamie,
you're going to be a guest speaker at.
Yes, Jamie is one of the promoters of it, who I had met at Dan's event. And so I think it's Dan is kind of exporting his show.
He is. He is after this year because, you know, it's in conjunction with the internationals. After this year, he's sort of dividing it. He's having 1 year in Texas, 1 year in California. Because, you know, as part of a legacy to this show, we're telling our guests that they have to buy our tables a round of drinks at the Masters. somebody's going to say, okay.
No. Sounds like a good idea.
I did that with Master Ken. And because, you know, Master Ken.
Oh, that guy, he's got the comedy thing on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right.
He's great. Master Ken is great.
Oh, he's fantastic. One of the funnest shows we've ever done. He's going to be the MC at this year's Masters.
Oh, that's going to be funny then. He's a funny guy.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. So, Rusty, since I interrupted you, since I've got control of the board right now, did you have any questions for Don?
No, I don't. I pretty much just wanted to call in and say hi and listen to the rest of the conversation. Although I do, you know, now that I think about it, I do have one question. I specialize in teaching kids, and what I usually like to ask as many guests as possible is what advice they would give to kids that would want to follow in their particular footsteps. Like, for example, you know, you were just a wonderful fighter in the circuit, and if I have any kids that want to go that route, what advice would you give young people?
My advice is pretty specific, and I believe that everybody, if you have a plan and it's complicated, it's going to be more difficult to execute it. And I have very simple, basic steps to get where I wanted to go. First, you know, all kids, whatever you want to do, if you want to follow my footsteps, well, then you have to set the goal to become a world champion, because, you know, that's where I think my actual career was launched. You know, anybody could be a contender and a fighter, but once you win your first world title, then things start changing. And so what they have to do is just think, have the goal, and think about the simple steps to get there. And my simple steps were to win all my fights. People said, how are you going to become a champion? I said, well, I'm going to win all my fights. And you know what? I did not win them all, but I won enough to win 11 world titles. And then when I got in show business, people said, well, how are you going to be an actor? How are you going to star in movies? And I said, well, the movies I'm in are going to make a profit, and people are going to want to hire me. Well, I've done 30 movies. All 30 have made a profit. So now it's not, you know, of course, that doesn't mean I'm not challenged every day in my career to find a good script, to raise more money for the films, or to try to get into studio films and make bigger budget, better films. But I am in the business, and I have done 30 successful films. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would tell the kids. Just, you've got to have a goal, and then be willing to do what it takes to achieve the goal. And the more simple their formula is, the better.
Awesome.
The easier to follow, more likely for success, I feel.
Wow, great advice. That was great advice, wasn't it, Wayne?
Absolutely.
I've got to wake him up. Oh, and by the way, since she asked that question, cross out question number 11.
That's what...
Sorry. Sorry to miss you.
If you're going to go away, start taking the show notes with you.
I know, right?
Well, you know, it just shows your thinking is in line. You guys are on the same page with your thinking.
There you go.
We always are. We always
well,
are.
Well, you know, it is a common thing with any of these motivational speakers you hear, like Tony Robbins and these guys. They say if you want to be where somebody is, do what they did to get there.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds simple, right? I mean, they do what they – now, here's where it might be more complicated. Was if you're not a great kickboxing champion, you can't get some notoriety in that area, well, then what do you do? Well, Cynthia Rothrock was a great forms competitor. In other words, you don't have to do it my way. There are many other people's. I'm just suggesting the way I did it was the simple formula of that followed my career. I moved out to L.A. and started auditioning. Well, Cynthia started her movie career in China and did a bunch of Chinese movies. Now she's back in the U.S. doing films here. But, you know, everybody, there are more than one road to any location, right? I mean, many ways you can go. Now, what do they say? Sometimes the most traveled is not always the right one for you. So, you know, when you start something that doesn't seem like it's working for you, then you can always just shift and try something else. But, I probably get as much enjoyment out of producing the films as I do acting in them. And that's nothing I could have predicted. As a kickboxer, or let's say the first day I took martial art lessons, do you think that one day I was already predicting when I was a white belt in Goju under Chuck Merriman, do you think I was predicting that I would be having a struggle to figure out which kind of movie I would be doing later on?
Right.
It wouldn't even occur to me. Right. It's so far away. But, you know, you just tell the kids or anybody that, you know, you just set these long-term, intermediate, and short-term goals and have a simple way to get from point A to point B and then work hard every day to accomplish them. And they don't have to do exactly as I did, but that simple idea, I think, will work for anybody.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I hope my youngsters are listening.
Yeah. Well, you're an instructor, so you can just teach them. You can just repeat it to them. Just say, the dragon says you have to have a simple formula.
Exactly. So train hard.
That's
no
right.
Sweat.
Train hard.
Yeah.
Well, Don, could you tell us a little bit how you got involved with the Masters Hall of Fame?
Well, Dan Hecht, I mean, he contacted me, I believe, probably by email or through a mutual friend. It could have been Bill Wallace, because I remember Bill was being invited to receive some type of award, and I was asked to come support him. And that's really why I went. At that point, I did not know Dan or his event. And, you know, there is a martial art event every single weekend somewhere, right? I mean, I go all over the world. There's an event somewhere, so I can't go to every one. And I only try to pick and choose the ones where either I have a personal friend that has, you know, I have a personal reason to go and support something, or if they want to pay me, because the dragon can be bought. It's a recession, and with the right money, I'll get on an airplane and fly all the way to Moscow to go to some event that I don't know a single person there. But, you know, that wasn't the case with Dan. It was a personal friend. Bill Wallace was getting an event. And once I went to his event and met Dan and saw how great it was and how wonderful it was for martial arts, of course, I've been on board ever since. And so that's how I got involved. I think Dan actually invited me to come to support Bill Wallace, and I did. And then now I go for my own selfish reasons because I like it.
Oh, that's great. That was actually the year I got inducted.
Well, I was there.
I was like nobody. I mean, I was online with Bill Wallace and Cathy Long. I was like, who am I to even stand up here with these two?
Well, you're a martial artist. You're a fellow martial artist. We all love the same thing. It's our passion. That's why we're all the same.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you remember, but I reminded Bill when he was on our show about him going down the line, grabbing some guy, random guy, out of the line of the rest of us and kissed him on the cheek.
Well, that's Bill.
That's Bill.
I thought that was
But, you know,
so
I've been
funny.
In Hollywood too long. If I do that, somebody's going to get a picture of it. It'll be on, you know, it'll be on TMZ, and they'll be saying, now we know why they call him the drag queen. Not the dragon, then. So I don't go around kissing the guys. I'm in Hollywood. I haven't gone Hollywood.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
I didn't know that was a term, gone Hollywood.
Bill can get away with that kind of behavior.
Exactly.
Oh, that's
well,
awesome.
Don, you've been involved with some notable martial artists, you know, Chuck Norris and Benny the Jet. What's your most memorable experience growing up being surrounded by these types of
people? Well, you know, my most, the one that strikes me the most is very recent, actually. It was 2 years ago. It was the last thing that Joe Louis did before he passed away. Rest in peace, Joe. He did a movie in Thailand called White Tiger with me and Cynthia Rothrock. And so I spent quite a bit of time with Joe in the hotel, on the set, you know, going to the gym together, going to parties together, you know, going out in Bangkok. And he taught me a lot. And people said, oh, man, did you guys talk about martial arts? And I said, no. He taught me a lot about life because he knew the seriousness of his condition. You know, he had a brain tumor, and then it was surgically removed, but it was still growing, and He knew it was stage four cancer, so it was like the worst. And instead of being, I thought we were going to have to keep him in good spirits, but instead of being in any way negative or depressed, he was the guy making everybody else laugh and have fun. And you know, he just taught me about, I mean, if it ever gets to it, if the dragon ever goes out, I want to go out like Joe.
Wow.
I don't want to go out, you know, depressed and sad and crying. You know, Joe taught me about, you know, a good way to live your life and a good way to leave this place. And you know, I have just more respect for him as a human being and not just a, you know, former champion and martial arts instructor. He's just a master of life, I would call it.
Cool.
Wow! Mm-hmm. Wow! I'm just thrown back by that. That was a great response. You know, all the guys we've had, you know, Joe Lewis, all these guys. I've never heard any bad things said about anybody, and this is why I'm so happy with. And Rusty is as well. Happy about the guests we've had, like yourself. You know, I was going to say you're probably just a pretty boy that couldn't get a real job, but I didn't.
Listen, I tell everybody they don't hire me for my looks. After 28 years of kickboxing, I'm lucky, you know, my face is in one piece.
Yeah, you want to bob and weave really well.
Well, you know what? I think one of the things that distinguished me was my defense. And when I teach seminars, I teach people defense because a lot of people think fighting is all about learning how to punch and kick. And it's not, because unless you want to be a punching bag, unless you want to absorb all the punishment while you're doing it, it is the first thing. We don't call it self-offense, right? We call it self-defense, self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
So we
mm-hmm.
should start with a strong defense. We should know when the bell rings that regardless of the outcome, you are not going to get hurt. You're not going to get pounded on and take a physical beating. Like I said, I may have some losses. I got 5 losses on my record, but I never took a beating. You know, I mean, at the end of the fight, a certain number of judges said they thought he won rather than me. But it was never like I got beat to a pulp and they said, oh, Don Wilson got beat. No, I never got beat up, ever, in almost 100 pro bouts over a 28-year period, fighting people all over the world. So I had a defense. And whether or not I won the decision, that was up to, you know, if you don't knock the guy out, you got to let 3 guys that never threw a punch probably decide. And so anyway, the thing that that I stress more than my fighting, offensive fighting style, was I had a great defense during my career, and that's the one thing I take pride in.
But then you have guys like me. When we saw each other, I was you were on one side, James was on the other. I had to do that last picture that my wife took with me, one uppercut under one chin, one uppercut under the other chin, knocking out the Wilson brothers.
Well, you know what? Everybody's punched me at least once, so you might as well join the crowd, man. You join a big group of people.
Absolutely. Wayne, again, we're hogging the mic. Usually it's me that's so quiet.
That's okay. That's
what do
okay.
you got for Don?
Usually, since I've been with you guys, I'm usually nonstop, but I have some sinus issues going on today, and my face is still a little bit numb still from the surgery, but...
What did you have today?
I had skin cancer
removed.
No, I had skin cancer removed from my mustache line, and they, for one little spot, they did a lot of reconstruction surgery. I've got over 60 stitches they just had removed, and that was outer.
Wow.
About 15 more inner ones. But
well, the more stitching they do, the less scarring you'll probably have. I mean,
that's what they said. And everybody that's in it last night, we had a banquet last night for a tournament association we belong to, and everybody said, you know, hey, it just looks like you just caught one on the lip, you know. But, you know, like my students, I told them all, you know, the only thing that I miss is my being able to grow a mustache. You know.
Well, you know what? The good thing is the skin cancer is the most curable and the best, you know.
And what
you have the best results from
the
treatment
curable.
Of skin cancer.
Right. Well, you know, you retired from fighting. Let me get this for you. You retired from
fighting. Well, every fighter that I've retired 3 times. It's my 3rd time. But I tell people I'll fight in the parking lot if they got cash. Every fighter is a mercenary, and if the money's right, The dragon will still come back for the fourth time.
What do you do to stay active these days?
When I can, I go to the gym. I mean, I you know, that's
people, I know
you train like you used to. I said, no, maybe once or twice a week I get away to the gym. And you know, I get to run around the park once or twice a week. You know, I only train now just so that I look like I can do the martial arts in a movie, you know, because that's really what I do now. And I do teach seminars, so I do give back to the community.
Cool.
And, you know, I support events and working on films. I started in, like I spoke before, a company called New Arc Entertainment. It's my own company with two other people, a real estate investor and a music producer. And we're going to be producing a movie called Blood Raid this year. And it's going to be my version of The Expendables. I'm going to have every B-movie actor I can get in it, every single one that will get in it. I'm going to have them all. Michael Dudikoff. I mean, I was going to have Joe Speakman, but I don't know if his health is okay. But Cynthia and me and Olivia Gruner and Lauren Avedon and Billy Blanks, everybody. Everybody I can get in it, I'm going to have a part for them.
Right on.
Very cool.
You know, they're either going to be the vampires or they're going to be cops or bank robbers. Because what it is this, don't tell us. Well, what am I doing? Don't tell anybody. Well, I'm telling them on the radio. But anyway, it's an action movie which is going to have cops, bank robbers, and vampires in it.
Very cool. That sounds awesome.
Now, you know, we haven't mentioned it too much on the show, but you just came back from Atlantic City for the largest martial arts show. Tell us a little bit about your involvement with Alan Goldberg's event.
Well, Alan started off the first year. I got an invitation from Alan Goldberg. Now, you remember, when I say invitation, it probably came through on the internet or a phone message. And not knowing him, I didn't go. I just didn't return the invitation. I just thought, you know, it's just one more Hall of Fame. I want to be busy that weekend. I don't want to go in cold weather. Atlantic City's too far to go. And I just didn't go. So Cynthia went to the first one, though. And then the next year, she said, Don, Alan is a great guy. I went. I had fun. It's a great event. We should support him, and maybe this thing can become something successful. So I said, okay, on Cynthia Rothrock's say-so, I'll go there to Alan's event. Well, I went the second year. After that, I was sold. Once you meet Alan Goldberg, he's such a great guy, and the event is a fun show. It's at the same place every year at the Tropicana. And that makes it just consistent. You know what I mean? You know how a lot of shows just bounce around from hotel to hotel, convention center, and they're in a different place every other year? Well, Alan has never moved from the Tropicana. And so I'm very comfortable there, and I just got back, like you said, and I saw all my friends, and it just keeps growing every year. More people come. It's a worldwide event, by the way. People come from all over. And I have a wonderful time, and it's good for the martial arts. Not a negative thing I can say about that event. You know, it's just growing every year, and he always has a few different things just so it's not the same event every year.
Oh, very cool. Wait, I'm going to take this next question. I'll let you ask because we've covered a lot of it. You know, let's go back to Dragon Fest. Now we realize now because of your brother calling, you've got more of an involvement. You're not just going to make an appearance. You've got a booth there that.
Right. You know, this concept for the T-shirts and the clothing company Dragon Traditions came about because of Tap Out and Affliction. They became the MMA brand that people recognized, and you know, it's a $200 million company every year. They gross over $200 million Tap Out. And so it's a big company. And they became the representative of martial arts. And if you look at their stuff, none of it looks Asian. None of it is traditional. None of it's a lot of looks like tattoo artwork. And it's, I don't know, I don't want to say anything bad about them, but the message sometimes is not what we really want to push with martial arts. They had a T-shirt. Tap Out came out with a shirt that actually said arrogance on it. Like, I'm so good, I'm arrogant, as if it's a good thing. Well, we as martial arts instructors, we teach people not to be bullies, not to be arrogant and full of yourself. And so we thought, why don't we do something that is different than them? We'll make T-shirts with a lot of colors. We'll have an Asian flair to them, but keep them modern. And if we put a slogan, it's going to be something positive. Like ours, we have some that say protect and defend. we have some that's, well, mine says one more fight, because everybody knows that's my personal T-shirt that I helped design, and I'm always looking for one more fight. But we try to keep it positive and slightly traditional Asian look to them, but with color and updated designs, and so far it's been very positive. The response has been positive, and it's been very, very successful all over the world. We're selling the shirts all over the world now.
Now, are you planning on expanding your clothing line, or are you just staying with
shirts? We got sweatshirts, and, you know, we're going to have, you know, we got Under Armour, or, you know, thermos, and I think we're going to go to shoes pretty soon. I've got a company that wants to do shoes, and so it's going to be a clothing line. It's an apparel company. It's not just T-shirts. Of course, we started with T-shirts, but if you know anything about the history of Ralph Lauren, Ralph Lauren was a clothing salesman who started selling ties. That was his first thing he had, ties. Well, you know what? Ralph Lauren's got a lot more than ties today.
got
everything. Ooh. So we're looking at that as our model. We started off selling martial art T-shirts. We want to generically, although not so generic that you can't see that it's a martial art T-shirt, but we're going to be eventually, hopefully, sold to the general public. I mean, that's the goal. You know, right now it's pretty much specific martial arts styles. We've got a Muay Thai shirt. We've got a Taekwondo shirt. We've got a Kung Fu shirt, karate shirts. But eventually they'll just be, you know, popular design for the general public.
Now, are you going to have that all on display at Dragon Fest?
Well, yeah, we'll have some, but like I said, you know, they can see, I believe, the full catalog of shirts at traditions.us, traditions with a Z at the end, .us. They can see the line, but we'll, you know, there'll be a local, there's a local distributor in Pacific Palisades, Jerry Blank, and I believe Jerry will supply the shirts for the show, have people there selling them. Because, you know, the actual company, we're not a retail company, we're a wholesale. And so we don't retail them ourselves. We wholesale them out to various distributors, and they basically are the ones that sell them to the public.
Ooh. Oh, very cool. I'm on the site right now, and you're the face for Traditions.
I'm my brother owns the company. That's my inside. So, but it's not just me. Cynthia Rothrock is also an endorser, and we're going to have more people as we go and the company grows. We'll have more than just me and Cynthia.
Oh, very, very cool. So you're trying to diversify then, Don. You're getting the clothing now. What are your up-and-coming plans for more movies and certain projects?
Since I've got my own company, New Ark Entertainment, I'm going to design specific projects that I believe will be successful. But I'm still going to be an actor for hire. As a matter of fact, just this week I was asked to do a boxing movie, and I don't know much about it, but it's a Christian-based boxing movie, whatever that is. And one of the stars, if not the star of it, is Kevin Zorbo. You know, he played Hercules.
Hercules, yeah.
He's in it, and they've asked me to come in, and I'm hoping I can get the script kind of rewritten so I can play myself, but they were asking me to play an announcer, I guess, for the boxing match or something. I don't really know. I have the script. I haven't read it, but I've just been asked. So and I've got three movies coming out that I did. One, White Tiger, which I actually did star in with Cynthia, Joe Louis, Matt Mullins. But I've got another Scorpion King I did last year, Scorpion King 4. That's by Universal Studios, and I was hired to do the action opening, and the very first take, the guy stuck me in the calf with his sword. Went all the way in. I had to go to the hospital and stitch my leg up. Yeah, I did one take, and so I came back and tried to finish the scene, but I don't know how much of he's going to end up in the movie. But anyway, I've got that. It's the action opening of the movie, Scorpion King. And then I've got a movie called The Whole World at Our Feet. And that's, I played a Chinese triad gang member, and I did just one scene with Armand Asante. It's got Michael Madsen, Armand Asante, Olivia Gruner. It's got a pretty big cast, and it was shot in Kazakhstan. So I've got several movies coming out and several movies that I'm going to be shooting, and it'll be a busy year this year.
What about a seminar schedule? Anything?
People can call me and contact me and ask me what weekend I'm available. If I'm available, I'm always willing to do seminars. I've got some lined up. I can't, off the top of my head, remember where or when, but But I will be traveling around and doing seminars, and you know, people can follow my Facebook page because nothing's private on there. So being a follower is the same as being a friend. I think I got the 5,000 friends in like 2.5 months, so I couldn't add any. But then now I've got about at least 7,000 or more followers. So people can all click on follow, and they can find out what my schedule is, because for sure, when I've got something coming up, I'll post it.
Oh, very cool. So you're going to be all over the world, though, this year. It's very busy.
Yeah, I pretty much do. I do a lot of travel. I'm on my second 1,000,000 miles with Delta, just on Delta, not counting all the other airlines I fly on.
Wow. Now, does your wife travel with you?
She did travel with me when we didn't have the kids. But now that we've got the kids, and she's a makeup artist for TV shows, so she's pretty much locked in. You know, she worked on Friends and Boston Legal and, you know, a lot of big shows. So she's pretty much dug in Hollywood. You know, she's got 2 new shows now she's doing. So she cannot take off.
What new shows is she doing?
You know what? I cannot even.
I
don't watch TV. Like, I don't even watch the Super Bowl every year. I told you, this is the first Super Bowl in 20 years. But her shows are, you know, they're hit shows. I mean, she's had many, and she's got some now. Whitney Cummings is one of her actresses. I don't know what her show is, but it's...
Two Broke Girls.
Whitney, what's Whitney's show? My wife's just at the office door. She's going to tell me her show. What are your shows? Love You, Mean It is one.
And Whitney.
Oh, it's called Whitney.
Oh, it's called Whitney.
Girl
okay.
Meets World. Starts airing in the summer. St. George. George Lopez. New show.
Wow.
Comes out March 6th. Okay, I'm getting the whole lowdown.
And
Mulaney. John Mulaney from Saturday Night Live. And Martin Short have a show she's doing. Elliot Gould. In 3 months. That's her new show. So, good. I'm glad you asked that question, because now I can find out what my wife's doing the next 3 months.
Right. Now she's keeping really busy.
Yeah. I tell people, you know, I used to always brag. I said, yeah, when the big stars want the best makeup artist in town, they go to my wife. Well, when Obama was here, she did his makeup. So I said, now you don't think there was a line of makeup artists wanting to do his makeup? So, yeah, she's actually
What did she do his makeup for? Not the Tonight Show.
It was a debate. He did the very first debate with McCain in Orange County. And so the TV producer of that called my wife to come do the makeup. And that was, a long time ago. It was him and McCain, so it was almost eight years ago.
Wow. Rusty, you're sitting there so quiet that it's so unlike you.
I'm broke, like broken.
Oh, you worked out hard tonight, huh?
Yeah. One of my students accidentally fell on my leg today, so I'm all like, huh, or yesterday. So I'm all like,
oh, gosh, so you actually got an injury. Oh.
What do you call it when someone, like, just, like lands on your thigh, you know, like lands with their knee?
Well, in California, you call it a lawsuit.
Yeah. Right.
Money in the bank.
There you go. I wonder what they call it in Oregon. But, yeah, I went to go throw him, and or he went to go throw me, and with a little bit too much force, so I had to go with it. And I was like, oh, okay. But I brought him with me, and then he just lost his footing and just, like, kunk, and just dropped his knee right on the inside of my thigh. And I'm like, uh-huh.
So
okay.
What, are you guys doing jiu-jitsu or judo or what? If you're throwing.
No, we were with Cipo Aldacascos.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well.
And he had some of his other teachers from the DeCostas Tactical Systems, secret Kevin Jackson.
When I tell people this story, you can talk to Al about it if he remembers.
Okay.
When I met Al DeCostas, it was in 1987 after one of my fights. It was in Orlando, Florida, and I got out of the shower. I had nothing on but a towel. And they brought him into the locker room, said, Mr. Wilson, Al DeCostas can't stay here, but he wanted to say hi and congratulate you on the fight. And so I came out and shook his hand, but unfortunately I was not wearing pants. So when I met Al DeCostas, it was with a wet white towel from a hotel.
Wow. Well, and let me tell you something, Don. If you ever need a little Asian lady that does martial arts, Rusty will be perfect. I taught a seminar at the last Masters Hall of Fame, and she made me look great. The way she reacted, she was fantastic.
I put everybody I know in my movies. If she lived in L.A., the next thing I'd do here, she'd be in.
Too bad I don't live down there.
Yeah, well, she is coming down to Dragon Fest, and she will definitely meet you then. For sure.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
We'll get a picture together. Do you know what's the date of Dragon Fest?
May 18th.
May 18th. Okay. I'd put that in my calendar. Otherwise, you know, I could be out of the country or something. You know, I want to, if at all possible, I want to be able to make it.
Now you're also going to be doing. You're going to be doing autographs and things like that as well.
Yeah, that's what I normally do. Yeah. I if they want, I'll do a fighting seminar. You know, sometimes I do that. But because I was doing that for Dan a couple of years. I taught a seminar.
Mm-hmm. I remember
but
that.
But mainly,
yeah.
They like pictures taken together and autograph photos, that kind of thing.
Right on.
Oh,
well,
very cool. I always look forward to seeing you because
we've
been to so many events at the same time. We never really talked until we ran into each other at the History Museum a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, well, you know, usually when I go to these things, there's so many people. People say, do you remember we were talking about this? And I at Alan's event, I mean, there's literally, there's several thousand people come to that thing. So in a course of 2 days, I talked to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm glad we did get a chance to meet and talk. And that's one of the, I guess, one of the pluses or the perks of going to these events is you can see so many of the people that you hear about and know about but don't get a chance to meet, and you can spend time with them all in one weekend.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Rusty, you were going to say something, my little friend.
I'm on painkillers. I was going to ask, I was going to comment about the Dragon Fest. I think instead of seminars this year, I think they're going to allow all the vendors about 10 minutes on the floor to talk to the audience about their product. So,
that's good for the vendors.
Yeah, it is.
Well, the way it's going to go, Rusty, from what Mike told me the other day, is you're right, he's going to have that, but he's going to have a stage in each area.
Oh, I see. So there's going to be, like, a stage for, like, the vendors and a stage for the media and the actors and stuff like that, I think.
Well, that's going to be good for Traditions because we at Traditions have – We had choices of, you know, we have an advertising budget. I think it's probably around right now, probably 20-something thousand a year. And we decided early on that one of the best things we could do, the best advertising, which is kind of one of the tricks that Tap Out pulled. If you look at a Tap Out shirt, the biggest thing you see is the name of the company, right? It says Tap Out on it. So everybody who wears it is now advertising your product and your company.
Mm-hmm.
So ours is somewhat similar. We figured the best way to advertise our product is to have people wearing them. So we give T-shirts away. That's the way we invest money in advertising and marketing, and it's really working. So anytime we get into a place like Dragon Fest, what we do is throw out free T-shirts. So let your people know, all the audience members that are hearing it now, when they come to the Traditions booth, when we have our few minutes, we're going to be tossing T-shirts out there. And they take over $34 each, so, you know, grab your shirt.
Right on.
At one party I went to out here in Hollywood, I was throwing out T-shirts. And the problem was when you face the audience, people I recognized that were friends of mine were jumping up and down wanting me to throw them, and I threw them right to my friends. Well, you know what? That's not the way you're supposed to do it. So what I do is I turn my back and I just toss them out there. So I don't know where they're going to go. I don't know who's going to get them. But we'll be given, definitely, if Traditions has a booth at this year's Dragon Fest, we will be tossing out some T-shirts.
Right on.
Oh, very cool. But actually, I was going to mention, one of these days, Rusty, somebody's actually going to bite on my line of crap. Anyway, I was going to say, it'd be nice if one of the investors of the company happened to drop a couple by a Dynamic Dojo booth.
You know what? I think I got an inside line, man. You might be able to get your own supply from – you might use contacts to get yours.
I told you, Rusty, sometimes somebody's going to say yes to me.
Yep, you got an in with the company.
Yeah.
Well, that's the old Hollywood thing. You know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, because friends of mine go, man, how can I get one of your movies? I said, well, you just let me know you want to do it and then fly out here, and then when we're shooting, and you could be in the movie. That's how easy it is. Because, you know, now if they have to, if they're co-starring it, of course, you know, the director, the producers, that's a difficult thing. But to get somebody in a movie, not only is it, I don't even consider me doing them a favor, I consider them doing me a favor, because when my friends are in the movie, I'm getting competent people who work their rear ends off and really want to be there, right? Or if they invest the time and the energy to be in a martial art movie, they really give their all, and they end up making me look good to the stunt coordinators and to the director and the producers.
Mm-hmm.
So I love putting people I know in my movies. And, you know, because they know me, you bypass the whole audition thing, because the audition thing is, you know, my choreographer gets a couple of his black belts, and maybe when they make the people do a few lines of dialogue, they make them throw their kicks, and they do a couple of you know, fight action things, and they may go through 100 people and pick 5. Well, that's a hard process to get in a Don Wilson movie if you don't know me, but if somebody knows me, meets me, and asks me politely, whatever, they're right in. They go right in. So that's how you get into Don Wilson movie. You just talk to Don Wilson. You just get right in. And that's how you get a Traditions T-shirt. You just talk to Don Wilson. You got your shirt.
Right on.
But
that's
the way it is. You got to know the people, though. You got to know them.
Absolutely. Wayne, what is your final question for Mr. Wilson tonight?
Oh, you know, I've been sitting here listening to a lot of the different things that you guys have all been saying and things like that. But you know what? I've really enjoyed getting to listen to a different side of you after watching your fights and your movies and things like that. And what is one of the things that you like to do to give back? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, whenever I try to travel to countries, they ask me to go to certain charities. And, you know, when you're asked to go to, like, a children's hospital that's treating cancer patients, and they're, like, under the age of 12 and whatever, and you see them smiling. And what they do is you go to the charity, and you pick up big bags of gifts and stuff for them. You give it to the kids. I mean, you know, now, of course, these young kids don't watch my movies. They've never seen me fight. But just to tell them that somebody's coming to visit with them, take pictures with them. Now, of course, the parents all know me. They're all impressed, and the hospital workers and the doctors and everything. But the actual kids don't. But, you know, I get a good – it makes me feel – if I could just make them happy and I give them gifts and things and take pictures with them, and you know, I just – there can't be any more worthwhile – cause for me than children with cancer, and I you know, I'm always willing to go to any kind of charity event where especially where I can actually see the benefits, you know, where the actual people, like Athletes and Entertainers for Kids, we actually go see the kids, and you know, then there's no there's no doubt that you're providing a worthwhile experience for the kids when you're actually there with them and see their smiles and take pictures with them and talk to them. And that's probably been the high point of my career, better than winning the world titles and starring in the movies, going to my screenings. And I will say, it's nice to see your bank account grow when you're working, right? I mean, it's always nice to get some material benefits. And that is nice, but, you know, it really doesn't compare when you – because it's the – you know, that's not the same kind of feeling when you see these kids and you see them smiling and you leave knowing you made their lives a little bit happier that day. I think that's the high point of my career. To be able to be in a position to do that makes me feel good.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
We've got 1 minute.
Yeah, we've got 1 minute. So really quick, Don, if you can tell our listeners how they can contact you via social media.
You know, they can. I got my website is donthedragonwilson.com, just my name.com, and then they can go to see any of my latest films at gorillapictures.net. That's G-O-R-I-L-L-A, pictures, plural, .net. That's a film company I've worked with the last three films. My clothing company, Dragon, let's see, no, it's not no Dragon, it's traditions.us, traditions with a Z. And those sites, they can all leave messages there for me, and if they send a self-addressed stamped envelope, I do send some autographed pictures. I do have some that I give away, and of course, you know, they have to send the envelope, or, you know. My last thing that I like to say is thank you to all the fans that have followed me throughout my fight career and the film career, because, you know, without fans in the audience, without people renting the DVDs and watching the movies, I have no second career, and I wouldn't have had my fight career if there wasn't an audience there.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to them, and thank you for the opportunity.
And thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule and joining us, Don. And thank you to Bob and Wayne for holding the helm while I was out getting beat up and watching the Seahawks game. All right. Well, have a great weekend, Don, and we'll talk to you hopefully at Dragon Fest coming up.
See you at the Dragon Fest.
All right.
See you then,
and
sir.
See everybody next week. Thanks, Bob.
All
thanks,
right.
Wayne. We'll
see
everyone next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks. Bye.